All right, cool. What are we doing this week?
Gary, are you familiar with the Chinese custom of the century egg?
Also.
Yes. So they take an egg and they bury it in sand for a long time, usually not a century, and it preserves and does a bunch of weird stuff. Well, my ancestor buried an egg, 100 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Two generations back, I'm Chinese. Did you know that?
I had no idea. I've only met you once, but you're wearing all that makeup. So
we're going to open it up today and see how she goes.
Yeah, like a time capsule,
like a biological time capsule. So here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, good Lord! Good. Oh my God, Cole!
You would think it would have fossilized at this point.
No. Ugh. No. That smell, that's a smell that doesn't exist anymore. Like when you open up something like that, it's like how if you have sex with a dead person, you can get STDs that have been eradicated. If you open up an egg that's been buried for 100 years, you can smell things that have not been smelled for a century.
Oh, Gary, I'm seeing something. I can see it. It's bright as day. It's bright as day.
Yeah?
It's Roadrunner's Death Valley Rally.
Oh, my God. Hold on. Let me make a message real quick on my netbook.
Okay.
There we go.
What'd you type?
Oh, fuck.
Okay.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Abject Suffering, the bad video game show from the creators of Watch Out for Fireballs.
And Bonfireside Chat. And all of those things.
Other shows.
You phrased it like a question.
From
the creators of podcasts.
From the creators of steak. Yes, from the creators of podcast.
Yeah.
And Abject Suffering.
And for this episode, we are exploring the dry sandy depths of Roadrunner's Death Valley Rally, a game which was developed by ICOM Simulations and published by Sunsoft for the SNES in 1992.
Twin marks of quality.
Yeah.
Those two companies.
Yeah.
I think that this game was somebody, like, if there's a god, which there's not, but let's just entertain the idea that there is, somebody listened to me complain about Sonic,
mm-hmm,
and how you can't see hazards before you run into them, and created a whole game about it.
Hey, you said that thing. Fuck you. This is what that actually is.
Fuck you. You think Sonic 3 is bad?
Yeah.
Bam. Imagine if you were zoomed in about four times as much.
It's okay. So literally this episode and the next one that we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit too much of lots of leaps of faith.
Yeah.
In these two games.
Mm-hmm. Like at least in this one. Okay. So in this one, there actually are bottomless pits, but yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like,
And sometimes at the end of long stretches in which you were encouraged to run,
mm-hmm,
like much, much more so than Sonic.
Yeah.
I almost guarantee that this game is some kind of response to Sonic. Like, it shares enough of the mechanics. Like, somebody was like, Roadrunner's the original Sonic.
Yeah.
Kids love Sonic. They're going to go nuts for the Roadrunner.
Are you reading my mind?
No.
Yeah. Sorry, no. You're reading my notebook. Right. Because, like this has to be some executive at Warner Brothers or ICOM or whatever saying, we got to do something. We've got to do something. Sonic 2 just came out. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
What do we have? And then just, like, doing this kind of fast follow. to get up on it, you know.
Yep. But it's like, it's way worse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's way, way, way worse than Sonic, even though, like, it's not in the grand scheme of Abject Suffering games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not that bad.
Right.
It's pretty bad, but it's not that bad.
Like I can come up with two, like, deadly faults that it has that, like, just keep it from being even considered to be played for fun. Mm-hmm. But, like, other than that, like, it looks good. I like how big the sprites are, even if that directly results in sin number one, which you said, you're zoomed in so far that you can't see the cactus or the inexplicable crab. Okay, it's a scorpion. Yeah. Okay.
Inexplicable crab.
Okay, crab. So a scorpion makes more sense than land crab.
Yeah, I mean, there could have been, like, a hermit crab or something like that, but there would be water somewhere.
Yeah, true. Nearby.
Yeah, and the game is definitely dicking with you, because there'll be, like, street signs that say, mm-hmm. run forward, and then you do it, and there's just a crab or a cactus right there.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing your, like, Sonic Dash, then you will hit them.
Yeah.
You don't get knocked back when you die.
Nope.
I was surprised by that. I was expecting that. I was like, oh, that seems like something the game would do. It also has what is the other game we did with those ridiculous horizontal jumps? Oh, Shaq Fu. Oh,
Kid Kool.
Yeah, Kid Kool as well. A lot of games don't understand that you don't need that much horizontal to your jump.
Right.
And this one, I mean, I feel like you could jump, like, a standing jump across two screens in this game. Like, your standing horizontal is so huge.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it also gives you jumps like that. Like, it requires you to make jumps that are, like, you know, maybe one or two Roadrunner widths.
Yeah.
You know? Which, let's be clear here, I'm not talking about the width of the Roadrunner sprite on the screen. I'm talking about the width of the Roadrunner hitbox, which is the size of his tiny little torso.
Yeah, exactly. Which would sound like an advantage when it, you know, is applied to enemies trying to get to you.
Nope.
But it ends up being a huge disadvantage to landing on things and then also to enemies trying to get to you. So your primary, if you're not familiar with the Roadrunner, which you might not be, because that was the other thing about this I was thinking, is that, like, is the Roadrunner popular? Is this something, like, who is this for? This was, like, Animaniacs, and like, we had moved on to better cartoons by this point, I feel like we had.
Okay, so I'm going to be a staunch defender of Looney Tunes at this point. So I was a young person when this game came out. And I had a youth full of daytime Nickelodeon cartoon watching of the Looney Tunes, and especially the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. I fucking loved these cartoons when I was little.
Isn't that just part of the fact that you're, like, you become unstuck in time, though? And, like, as a kid, you watch the cartoon of a kid 50 years your junior, and then now as an adult, you watch Nick at Night and stuff of, like, someone 50 years. You're not your junior, you're senior.
Oh, my senior.
Yeah, like, it's just the same way that you are moving in two parallel lifelines forward at the same pace, but you know, in no way contemporary.
Yeah, in no way. Basically, I am living in eras that are not my own.
Yeah, isn't that part just a symptom of your quantum leaping?
I don't think so. I really, really don't think so. I think that if you did a general, like, a poll of the general population, and you took out people like yourself who were non-believers, for lack of a better word, and if you cut out people who wanted to use their, you know, their welfare checks on them Taz slippers, you know, like the people who would wear the, you know, like, Tweety Bird all thugged out.
Yeah, like kinda a Tweety Bird dressed up like a gangster.
Yeah. Like, yeah. If I was in a room with a screen that was showing Wile E. Coyote, I'd be like, hey, cool, Wile E. Coyote. And I like that. I like the cartoon for a lot of reasons, mostly because they stick to a very rigid set of rules and they do a lot of stuff within it.
I just like the cartoons with really strict systems.
Yeah.
Like, you're more appreciator of the ecstasy of order of Warner Brothers cartoons as opposed to your structuralist tendencies know no bounds.
True. But so I think that it is for people. It's one of those universal things. I'd be more freaked out about, like, a Mickey Mouse. I don't know who Mickey Mouse is for anymore. Anything that, like, that is attached to. But, like,
for sure anymore. Yeah. I guess my point more is that, like, I mean, when I was younger, I would watch a Looney Tune if a Looney Tune was on, because I would watch any cartoon.
Yeah.
If it was on, like, Opposites Attract video was on, kick ass. Like, I'm into this as a cartoon on it. But at this time, I feel like it wasn't, like, at its peak. There were no new Looney Tunes. There was nothing. It wasn't being shown on TV.
This was 5 years before Space Jam. Like, I think Space Jam was like the crest of that wave.
But though, I feel like the wave hadn't started at this part. I feel like the wave hadn't started at this point. Like, this was, I mean, like Tiny Toons may have reignited the world's love affair with the suffix tunes, but it's not, like, I mean, I just don't, I could see kid, like, 13-year-olds in 1992,
mm-hmm.
like 12-year-olds in 1992, like, not knowing, like, I knew who Roadrunner was, but not really caring. Like, not, you don't watch it every day. It just seemed like, it seems like a weird marketing move to me.
Yeah.
Like, not a hot intellectual property. The same way, like, Bugs Bunny wouldn't be.
True.
You know,
true.
Like, those Bugs Bunny games are really weird to me because it's like, yes, everyone knows who Bugs Bunny is, but we're kids that, you know, kids of that age, at least, like, myself and my contemporaries were all into The Simpsons and Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
And at this point, when it came to comedy cartoons, I was into Tiny Toons. And then, like, a little bit later, Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, the new Warner Brothers stuff. Like, the old Warner Brothers stuff is kind of, like, I mean, it's, there's, you know, charms to it, and it's good animation, and there's some fun kind of slapstick stuff, like, that goes on in there. I don't know.
I'm delighted because a good portion of my work week is dedicated to doing workshops where we just study this shit. So like, I have this reignited appreciation for this animation and this character design and everything like that, and just kind of that ethic around it. And I think that it informed a lot of what was happening with Tiny Toons and Animaniacs, both of which were superior in a lot of ways because it kind of tapped into that, you know, like, meta media kind of, like, referential stuff.
Yeah, it developed, it taught kids about irony.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is really important. Like, that's, I'm way more into that than I am into slapstick and, like, these character designs. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand animation. I understand an appreciation for animation, but I'm always going to be,
but like
a writer fan as opposed to.
But, like, Roadrunner was developed as a reaction to how stupid chase cartoons were. Like Chuck Jones has come out and said, like, we thought Tom and Jerry was the stupidest thing, so we wanted to make something that did it but better.
Like, I mean, that's fine as an idea, but it's still, like, anytime you have something like that, like, you're still
you're still contributing to the body of work that
you're contributing
in.
Be careful what you pretend to be, because you are what you pretend to be,
right?
For one. For two, like, that's an interesting idea once, and then, like, even now, like, I'm sick of, I mean, I get it, like, that the whole the formulaic aspect that you appreciate, like, I feel like rankles me a little bit. Not that I need, like, a cartoon to be desperately unpredictable and I want everything to be, you know, Animaniacs quality good. But, like, I just feel like there's, like, a smarter, I don't know. Like, it just seemed like at that time, it, like, kids are watching smarter things. Like, maybe I'm giving too much credit to kids.
Yeah.
But I feel like
you definitely are.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Because, even if you look at the TV shows and stuff, like, if you watch, like, something like even, like, a DuckTales is smarter than a Roadrunner.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah,
I think that there's an economy to it that is worth appreciating, but that's that might just be my own neuroses. But I was also, I grew up with my grandparents taking me to the United Auto Workers Union to watch, like, films.
To strike?
To throw bottles at scabs.
Yeah, see the food you're taking out of this boy's mouth?
Yeah, no, like, going to the UAW, like on one Saturday a month to watch, like, film reels of this shit. So I don't know. I think that it has this weird relevance that continues. If we were playing a Gumby game, I would be entirely behind you. But
see, we are different generations, because I think Gumby has a kind of unique weirdness
love
appreciating
Gumby
too. Like, even though they're both, I mean, I think that
Felix the cat.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, Felix the cat is pretty worthless. Like, you know, there's some old cartoon of, like, Felix the Cat versus Old King Cole that I watched as a kid. And I was like, who the fuck is Old King Cole and why should I care? Like, even as, like, a 4-year-old, I'm like, this is bullshit.
Who the fuck is Felix the Cat?
Yeah, I don't. He's got a bag. I get it. And they did make a Nintendo game out of Felix the Cat, too, weirdly enough.
You know, if we say the name of a game, somebody's going to request it.
Probably. I don't remember it being that bad of a game. But it is. It was simultaneously weird from a marketing perspective.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. But yeah, so I guess that's where I fall down on Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. So we were talking about the character.
Yes,
design,
and yes, game,
right?
With the same name.
Yes, so we were talking about the character design. I love the Roadrunner's character design. Just how it's all limb.
Yeah. Like, it definitely looks good. Like, I like the way the characters look too. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, that's no argument for me.
You clawed.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I think they look good.
Yeah.
You know. And, like, it's kind of, I guess, like, a real introspective moment. I also think it's part of his, like, a inherent resistance for me and for slapstick. Like, that's not something that has ever really appealed to me. Like, I don't like the Three Stooges. I've never really enjoyed America's Funniest Home Videos. I don't know what I'm trying to think of other, like, stalwarts of the slapstick genre, but, like, somebody chasing somebody, that person, like, draws a pit on the ground and the person falls into it and then they get hurt. Like, it's just never going to do it for me. I don't know.
It's not even just that. Like the idea that the Wile E. Coyote can draw the continuation of the tunnel on the side of it on the side of the wall, and then the Roadrunner can go through it, and then he runs into it, and then he can run he can draw the broken bridge in front of the real bridge, and the Roadrunner goes through it, but then he falls through. Like the way that they took those rules and then applied it to one, but then not the other. But then also, like, gravity was his worst enemy, not the Roadrunner.
Like
it was always him hurting himself.
Yeah.
Like, even at a young age, I appreciated that, like it was just humiliation. You know, it's like, what is it in UHF? Here we are. It's one of our favorites. It's this pathetic little coyote who is always hungry. And instead of getting something to eat, we just watch him get tortured over and over again.
Yeah. But that's what they were criticizing with, like, Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
They were trying to do more than, like, I don't know. Then it gets into that you're contributing to what you're criticizing. I don't know, man. Yeah. This is like a pilot episode for a different show, which is like one person appreciates something. No. Like, one person appreciates something, the other person doesn't. And then you just there's an Earwolf show called Analyze Fish.
Mm-hmm.
That's really excellent. That's a Harris Whittle is trying to convince Scott Aukerman to enjoy the band Fish. And it's wonderful. Like, there's only four episodes of it that are in canon. It's highly recommended because it's not like this. Like, I don't disagree with you as strongly as he disagrees about Fish, but it's continuously has the moments where Harris Whittle will play part of a song and, like, Scott Aukerman will be into it. And then Trey Anastasio will say the dumbest lyric that's ever been written. And Scott just like, whoa, stop it. Why would you do that? That's so, like, it sounds like cool noodling. And then he'll be like, take that geezer in the freezer, pick him up with tweezers. And he's like, what the fuck are you? Why would you play this for me? And it's real funny.
Yeah. So unlike Fish, I think that Roadrunner is mostly innocuous and it is not.
No, I agree. I'm not thinking it's a malignancy. I just think it's weird to market it to, like, Super Nintendo kids.
And it's also that, like, when this was contemporaneous for me, which is when I was 5 years old, that was also the age when I was watching Roadrunner on Nick Jr. So,
yeah,
like, I mean, like, I don't know that it was, like, marketed so much to SNES kids who are your age. It was marketed to people who were my age when they were SNES.
Yeah. Yeah. But what's strange about that, though, to me, is just that they were also marketing things that were, like, a lot more sophisticated to you, like things like, like, you know, Zelda and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of, I mean, there's just a dissonance there for me, which is fine.
Yeah, which is perfectly fine. I mean, we spend most of these shows talking about the thing that it's licensed from anyway. So.
right.
Yeah.
Because there's not, I mean, how far did you get in this?
I didn't get out of the first episode or whatever. Zippity Splat.
I got to the boss of Zippity Splat.
I didn't get that far. I went through, like, the first three zones of it twice, and then I just, like, died. I was like, ah, fuck it.
You're right at the boss.
Okay.
Like, the boss is right after that, which is fine. It's kind of neat. Like, they show the blueprint for the big death machine that Wile E. Coyote is going to make, and then it shows you the weak point, and you just have to peck it. But it's frustrating because it kept slamming into me. Get out of the way of it.
Yeah, your incredibly small hitbox doesn't do anything for you when it comes to Wile E. Coyote.
No, the fucking level with the remote control planes.
Yeah.
God, those things suck.
They're like 1/4 the size of your sprite.
But they come at you
them.
Like, they hound you, and they come at you from, like, angles you can't avoid. And your attack is nothing. Like, you can kind of peck things if you time it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot, you're attacking your offensive vocabulary is really shit. That's as far as I got in this game. I rented this as a youth.
Oh, yeah.
But now, in retrospect, we talked about how we both rented it. Now it's weird that I did. Maybe I've got some, like, Wolverine style implanted memories. Like, the Roadrunner molested me as a kid. And I don't think that's funny. Well, I don't understand why people like that show. It's dumb. It's real dumb.
He's got that tongue, man. He's got that tongue.
Yeah, but I just had a really bad trip to Six Flags. And then, like, you, like, you know, you were actually into it. So it makes sense. I don't know why I rented it. Maybe because I was like so into, you know, the Tiny Toons.
Yeah, that's entirely a possibility. Although there was no Roadrunner or Wile E. Coyote analog on Tiny Toons.
There's not a coyote. I thought there was. You're right, but there was like weird cameo kind of stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah, you're probably right.
Show up. And there are good Tiny Toon games too. Mm-hmm. That NES Tiny Toons game is pretty fun.
Yeah, the SNES one's kind of balls, but
yeah, I believe it. The NES one's good. I guess part of this whole thing too is like I tend to judge things. Part of our nostalgia bent that is our podcasting empire is like the me. I want to go back to things I liked as a kid, and see, you know, I'm most rewarded when I go back to something that I liked as a kid and I still like.
Mm-hmm.
That feels the most like that feels the best to me. And then when I go, so I tend to judge things based on, you know, what I like them now, you know, and I try not to, it's harder for me to appreciate something for what it is sometimes if it's not immediately appealing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does. I mean, does it get over your initial prejudice? And like prejudice is a harsh word, but by that I just mean
right.
prejudice I could be drinking a beer, masturbating, or sleeping right now.
Sure,
like, entertain
or like
me
watching The Simpsons.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
like I could be watching something that like makes me laugh.
Yeah,
you know, as opposed to kind of having like a soft chuckle mm-hmm. at, you know, smiling out loud at a bygone era.
Yeah,
like I would rather, you know, there's enough sources for like legitimate, you know, comedic brilliance
mm-hmm.
in my mind for me to. I don't know. I don't know what that is. I'm not trying to posit myself as sophisticated. That's not what I'm getting at. It's probably a dysfunction in my brain.
Yeah. No. I think that I'm following your train of thought.
It reminds me of my friend Derek is really into the Cosby Show,
mm-hmm.
and like there's some funny jokes on the Cosby Show, and I get why it's important.
Mm-hmm.
But if I watch it, like I can't help but like it's like I don't really like sitcoms. These kind of like sitcom. These jokes I don't like very much.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather watch, you know, like something that's like a little bit.
I'd rather watch The Wire.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I want to see black people in there like succeeding. Yeah. I would rather watch Avon Barksdale than Dr. Cliff Huxtable, all right? No, it's not that. It's just I would rather watch like an Arrested Development or something. Like, I just feel like, I don't know. And I'm not trying to posit myself as sophisticated because it's undeniably a good show.
Given the choice between watching The Cosby Show and All in the Family, I will pick All in the Family every single time because it's more subversive.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you look at those two things as being similar, you know, I will pick the one that is more edgy. Not like edgy for like, oh man, Cool Ranch Doritos edgy, but right. like just kind of like this is provocative.
Right.
Right. Like even among things that are of a similar stripe. Oh, here's a story. I used to work in Bill Cosby's old dressing room.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I was a production intern on As the World Turns. That studio is where they shot all of The Cosby Show. And the production office was Bill Cosby's dressing room.
That's it. That's crazy.
I know, right?
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you find Cosby's gold?
You know what? I'm pretty sure it's a myth.
Aw, damn. We haven't talked very much about this game because there's not much to it.
Yeah, really.
Like it's pretty average. Like actually a little bit below average. Like not worth playing, but not so bad as to demand attention or anything like that.
So I mean, just kind of like it definitely is. Like it's got the quarter pipes, like Sonic has. And that like rung out to me. Your controls are real limited, like limited offensive vocabulary. Definitely a real problem. Like you can do this cute little like fast peck on the ground in front of you. Like, you know, you can find the bird seed laid out to recover your dash meter. But it's useless unless the thing that you're trying to attack is standing stock still.
And right in front of you.
Yeah.
Like you have no range.
Right, like you have to be pretty much on top of it, which with his sprite is really, really hard to gauge. Additionally, you have two buttons to do either the meep meep or the I can't make the sound, but it sounds like a bunch of corks popping in.
Yeah,
which I like that. I like whenever a button is just made to do a thing in a game, like a gesture or something, like the hug button in A Boy and His Blob on the Wii. You know, just kind of like it serves no purpose but to give you something to do.
I like that too. Like, I almost feel like there's a seed to a good game in here. Like, zoom out, you know, about 2 to 3 times, increase like the variety of what you do. Like, who's the sad person who's collecting all these flags?
Yeah.
Like that system is really weird. Like they merge collectibles with the game with checkpoints. Mm-hmm. And like, so you're supposed to get all of the checkpoints. You don't have to. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happens if you do. Some of them are different colored. I don't know what that means. Like, if there's no, maybe it's in the manual.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I would just get a couple of the checkpoint flags, but like you can, it's just kind of at best, it's kind of like a collectathon with shitty controls and shitty platforming. That looks good and has like a lot of personality.
Yeah. And like the personality can't be undersold. Like they do a lot of, they go a long way to like repurpose some of the visual gags from the cartoon in sprite art, which is really cool because like those gags are pretty sophisticated in terms of like frame by frame animation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, when Wile E. Coyote drops and his neck extends and his head falls later, like that elicited a chuckle for me because like, oh, they totally could have just had him fall, but they put in that extra nod towards the license, you know, towards the source material. And it paid off for me in this, you know, 15 frames of animation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's bizarre. It's without trying to reignite the first half of this podcast, it's crazy to me to think of anything in this game as being funny. Like it just doesn't, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's not a reaction I would have to that.
I'm not laughing like the first time I read Catch 22.
yeah. I mean, I don't expect that. Maybe I just like there's like you are Dark Souls with your light roll, medium roll, and heavy roll, and I am Demon Souls with my light roll and heavy roll, I just don't have that middle ground where I'm like.
so you're saying my standards are lower? Okay.
No, you just have more granularity to your standards.
Okay. Yeah,
like it's not lower. You have a continuum, and I have an on-off switch for funny. Like,
yeah.
That could be what's at work. Just to put things into a soul,
because
reference that no one will, a bunch of people will not actually understand.
Yeah. The Souls reference is the snail in one scene of Adventure Time to the like of our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it always has to be there, and we don't always call attention to it.
I don't know anything about these Souls games, but I just know they involve you eating rolls, and that's all.
So, as I always do, and I know this is running a little long, so I apologize. I keep thinking, how could this like how could they have utilized this better? And like in my head, I'm picturing some kind of incredible machine meets like Bad Piggies kind of thing, where you are Wile E. Coyote putting together pieces from the Acme catalog in order to not catch the Roadrunner, but just not die until you reach the next screen,
like Warner Brothers Deception.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Like, okay, new feature for the show. Every episode, we're going to say, like, what would have been the better take on this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I would have really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great, because the other thing, too, is, like, so the Roadrunner cartoons, for their merits, whatever they are really short and totally one gag.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, one thing happens. Like, here's a Roadrunner cartoon. Wile E. Coyote has created a helicopter device. The Roadrunner jumps from cloud to cloud. Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote dies somehow. That's all that happens.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why there's not a Roadrunner movie. You know, like, there's not enough action or joke or anything to any of this stuff to sustain longer than, like, how long are those cartoons? 2 minutes?
Oh, they're approaching like 3 or 4. Yeah.
Like 3 or 4, but still not.
Yeah. So it's just not very short. Long. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's not enough there.
Mm-hmm.
This, like, at the very least, even if you get on board with the merits of Roadrunner as a property and idea, which I'm not, you know, it doesn't really work on me, but I'm not saying there's no quality there. There's tons of quality there. It doesn't lend itself to a video game experience like this. It's like kind of like X-Men, where they took a game that suggested a better playstyle, similar to like what Cole was saying, and then, you know, shoehorned it into a mascot platformer, essentially, just because Roadrunner goes fast. It has to be a Sonic ripoff. Whereas like that would be really fun. Like I could see trapping the Roadrunner being really cool.
Yeah.
Or like a pursuit. You could almost do like a Cannibalt
kind of game, shit.
Like actual pursuit, like as opposed to, because you're punished for running away from the coyote, mm-hmm. and the coyote does not chase you. You just jump over him and he just runs back and forth. Like right. he's very lackadaisical in his chase. So like making it actually about pursuit or making it about trapping the Roadrunner, which are the mm-hmm. two things the cartoon is about.
Yeah.
Would have been way smarter. It's a really poor adaptation.
Yeah.
Of the source material, regardless of how you feel about the source material.
Did you ever play the Duck Amuck game for DS?
No.
It is really good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Huh. Like we're talking. So you know the short that I'm referring to, Duck Amuck?
Yeah.
Where it's... Yep. Where
it's the hand of the eraser.
Yeah, in, like the artist that redraws him as the horrible monster kind of thing. It is a really short, kind of goofy adventure game where like you are the hand that is fucking with Daffy Duck.
Mm-hmm.
And like it kind of plays through a bunch of those different kind of things. So think of it like a Rhythm Heaven or Feel the Magic kind of thing. I guess Elite Beat Agents rather. And like you're just going through these different things. It's really cool. Like if we're talking about something that captures the feel of it, like that is the successful way to capture like what one of these shorts is.
Yeah, that would be, you know, that would be neat. That sounds neat. Like I guess like when you're adapting something, there's the problem. Campster, like the Aaron Signal, has a really good video about adaptation mm-hmm. in video games, and he talks about, you know, something can be a, like, so when you look at the Disney games that are also great, like not very many of them are good adaptations of their source material,
right.
But they're good games, so they can be appreciated on that level, you know. But they're not really games about what the thing is. And he talks about the Ghostbusters game, like the most recent one, the Xbox one, mm-hmm. And how that's like, it's not a terrible game, but Ghostbusters is a movie, like a comedy about small business,
right?
Like, you know, it's not about, you know, FPS anything.
Right.
And that's what I feel like here, like in so many things, and like Abject Suffering, is it just like the need to turn everything into a platformer is a real issue.
Yeah.
And ruins a lot of these adaptations.
So I'm baffled by, so you know, this isn't the first ICOM game we've ever played, Gary.
What else was ICOM?
Deja Vu, Uninvited, oh, Shadowgate. Yeah.
But those were they ported them, right? No, they were
Macintosh. Yeah. Yeah, they put them out on Macintosh. And then it takes a pretty quick dive after that because it goes right to the Addams Family.
Again, like I'm sure that's just a dumb platformer and not like about, you know, a real estate agent coming and you setting traps for them or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, or you trying to act normal in front of mm-hmm. whatever, like the normal woman.
Yeah,
I can't remember her name in the Addams Family.
Alec Baldwin. What, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you watched a lot of Addams Family, Cole.
Yeah. I fucking love the Addams Family, both the TV show and the movies.
Yeah.
I noticed I said movies.
Yeah. I remember that, actually. I remember that movie being kind of subversive and funny.
Yeah, it's like the Brady Bunch movie.
Yeah, I remember that, but not being too bad.
Yeah.
But and that sucks that ICOM did that because the MacVenture games are wonderful.
I know, right? You can listen to that on Watch Out for Fireballs.
Yeah, the good game podcast that we do. Not necessarily good, but
mostly. Like 95% of the time good.
We don't go into it disliking it.
Yeah.
On that show.
We don't go into it with these prejudices.
Yeah.
So that's right there. Do you have any good like game facts stuff on these?
No, but actually both these games, the next episode, we record these two episodes in a row usually. Both these games do not have very robust internet presences.
Huh. So do we just like do admin and then fuck off?
I think so. There's just not too much to it. Like this game, it's like all the reviews and stuff are like 6 or 7s out of 10.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's this is a real average.
Might
number.
As well not exist.
Yeah. So thank you, Brad Carey.
Yeah.
For suggesting this. Go fudge yourself, I guess.
Like, yeah, fudge. Like.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I just noticed that I'm looking at the list to see who suggested it, and our next game, which is Bubsy 2. Mm-hmm. Both Bubsy and Bubsy 2 are on our list. I've noticed that before. It's pretty funny.
Do we disqualify Bubsy?
No, we can do a full like longitudinal study of the series.
Oh no, like let's do a vertical slice, including
vertical
Bubsy
slice.
3D.
Yeah, yeah, yipes.
I'm sure there's a level in Bubsy called Yipes! !
Undoubtedly. So there's not too much to say about Roadrunner's Death Valley. So fudge yourself. Next time we're doing Bubsy 2. If you like the show, please rate, review it, do all that stuff.
Tell your friends. I mean, yes, this is a video game podcast, but it's also a comedy podcast.
Also, sometimes it's just like a two-man self-examination of my relationship to humor. So sometimes it's neither funny nor is it a video game podcast.
All that I said was, I like Roadrunner, and then you decided to start pecking.
It's dangerous if you get me thinking about something I've never considered before. Like, it's really hard for me not to do all my thinking out loud. I find there's one other abject suffering that was like this too. This also happens if, like, I'm tired. So
Wayne's World was like that a little bit, but
yeah. But anyway,
iTunes,
help people learn about the show. Not enough people listen to it is what we're circling around.
So yeah, that's what we're getting. So
We want more people to listen to the show.
Yeah, so, Facebook. We have a Facebook group. And then if you want to suggest a game, go to duckfeed.tv/abject suffering. There's a little module on the right, and that will take you just enter that form, and then that drops it right into our little spreadsheet. So
and as you can hear, like, that's what we do. That's where we get all our games from. So we haven't chosen one game for this show.
Right.
That we've just decided to do. So everything is listener.
You know what? I never said it at the beginning. Why are you doing this to us?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is why you're doing this to us.
Yeah.
Because you want to hear this, I guess.
Whatever the fuck this is.
Yeah, whatever this pilot for a show about convincing people to like things.
I wasn't even trying to convince you to like things.
Convincing to see the merit of.
Yeah. Okay, to acknowledge as, like, being extant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Huh. Yep. Anyway, until next time. Meep meep.
So. I'll just put in the Roadrunner sound. Meep meep.
Don't you mean meep meep?
No. That cork sound. What?
Yeah. Or they said they just paid me for one meep and then looked
back. And they doubled it in post, the cheap bastards.
Yep.